My dearly beloved brethren and sisters in Christ Jesus, I've heard of an individual whose request was that before she died, she would like to be in an ecclesia whose members truly loved one another. As one person complained, we hear plenty of exhortations about love, but we don't see it manifested when the ecclesia gets together. How can we achieve this overarching vision of our ecclesia truly loving one another? How can we, as the ecclesia of the living God, come to truly and deeply love one another as Christ loves us? It is indeed a challenging and daunting task. But brethren and sisters, one we must rise to meet if we are to live up to Christ's statement, which he says in John 13, "A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Christ and the Father have already envisioned the ecclesia of God as being knit together, with each person supplying something to the work of unity and growth in love. Can we imagine that? They already know what we are capable of doing. They've already see the encouragement and the inspiring role that we have to carry out in our individual ecclesias. They have put us in this position because they see the potential for the future. They have seen something that the ecclesia can use, and they know that we are the individual that can supply that. Woe unto us if instead of supplying that strength and encouragement, we instead sow discord and we thus weaken the ecclesia. But speaking the truth in love may grow up unto him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. Here Paul is painting a picture in Ephesians for us, as Brother Jerry quoted, a body. The picture of a body with Christ as the head. We all grow up unto him, from whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. Now I'm going to come back to this verse in a few minutes, but Paul is clearly telling us that we can no longer live the way we used to live before we came into Christ. We have become a part of a body. We are just one part of a whole body, and we have a position to fulfill, a job to do, and an account to give of how well we filled that role that he expected us to play in the body. "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their minds, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feelings have given themselves over unto lasciviousness," which is unbridled lust or wantonness, "to work all uncleanness with greediness. But ye have not so learned Christ. That ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of their minds. Your life is no longer about you. You have become part of something larger, the body of Christ. That requires a change in attitude. It necessitates a different way of looking at people and things. Yea, a whole different outlook on life itself. Paul says in Corinthians, for as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are you all baptized into one body. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear shall say, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But now hath God set the members, every one of them in the body, as it hath pleased him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, yet one body. The eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor. And our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. For our comely parts have no need. But God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. So now I'm going to go back to Ephesians 4, where we read, from whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body unto itself, unto the edifying of itself in love. From whom, says he, that is from their head, from Christ, who conveys the influence and the nourishment to every particular member. From this head, the whole body of believers are fitly joined together and compacted. Christ has put the ecclesia together in an orderly manner, firmly united amongst themselves, with everyone in his proper place and station, in order to perform their required duty. In Colossians, Paul uses the term knit together in love. Have you ever had something that was knit together? And there's one section you don't like, so you cut it out? No, the whole thing falls apart. That is the way God sees the ecclesia. He has put all the parts in place as he sees fit, each one having its important function, knit together in love. By that which every joint supplieth, every one of those parts thus united gives to the whole. Just like the veins and the arteries and the nerves in the body all serve to unite the members to the head and to one another. And you know what, brothers and sisters? God designed the body to work that way, and he did the exact same thing with the ecclesia. Something is terribly wrong when our body doesn't function that way. We recognize it, and we immediately go to the emergency room or to the hospital to get it corrected. So why do we accept the dysfunction in the ecclesia? Isn't that far more vital? Isn't Christ's body more important than our own? According to the effectual working in the measure of every part, that is, whatever role God has placed us in the ecclesia to fulfill, nourishment is conveyed to all the other parts of the body in their proportion, and accordingly to the need of every part. That's the way the healthy body works. And it is exactly the same for the ecclesia, according to Paul's explanation. So we've learned that each member of the ecclesia receives his or her position from Christ for the sake and benefit of the whole body. And no member is insignificant or unneedful as far as Christ is concerned. Do you need help? Then ask. That is what the body is there for. Can you assist? Then ask. That is what the body is there for. That is what the ecclesia is all about. That is how each member is strengthened. And as a result, the whole body, or the ecclesia, become stronger from working together. In the early 80s, I worked at Deaconess Hospital in Boston, and I was involved with physicians doing AIDS research. I remember the first case of AIDS, they flew in from California, and they scary time we had being in the room with this patient with this rare disease that people were dying of. We had no idea what it was or why they were dying. The body's immune system was just shutting down. The immune system is set up to protect the body from disease. Now, Paul did not use the immune system as an example of parts of the body working together, because that's something that you don't see, like the hand or the foot or the eye. It is a body system that is working very diligently behind the scenes. In our AIDS research, we found that the white cells just were not doing their job. And as our research progressed, we found out that the problem was with the T helper cells. They were the ones that weren't doing their job. Now, this is a very small microscopic cell that I didn't even know existed in the body. But as it turned out, it plays an absolutely essential part of the human's body immunity system. The T cells are a type of white blood cell that circulate around our bodies, scanning for cellular abnormalities and infections. They do nothing until they see the problem. Almost every aspect of the immune response is controlled in some way by T cells. These multifunctional cells have the ability to scan the body intracellularly for foreign invaders, directly kill cells infected with a virus or a bacteria. They eradicate unwanted cells like cancer cells. They activate and they help other immune cells like the phagocytes that ingest the germs or that make other antibodies to fight those germs. And these T helper cells can remember a germ that they encountered decades ago, so that many diseases that we get even as a child, we become immune to because the T helper cells remember them. And when they see it, they get it and eradicate it before it can reinfect us. So this slide, see if I can. We have an antigen, which is something that stimulates the immune system, a bacteria, a virus, just some antigen that stimulates the immune system. A phagocyte sees this germ and it eats it. But then it takes part of this antigen and it puts it to the outside of its cell. And then the phagocyte hands it off to the T helper cell. And the T helper cell is then activated. Now it's activated. If you think of like my hand can be formed into many different shapes and can do many different things. But it's like a T helper cell that's floating around the body until it's handed something. And let's say you hand it an orange. Okay, now my hand will hold an orange. And whenever it sees an orange, it grabs it. If it saw a grapefruit, it ignored it. The grapefruit doesn't fit. A watermelon or something like that doesn't fit. So it ignores it. It sees a grape, ignore it. Even a tangerine that looks like an orange, but it doesn't fit. So the T helper cell ignores it. It only goes after that it was triggered or activated to respond to. So these microscopic T helper cells that we never think of are vital, working behind the scenes day and night to keep the body healthy. But God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked. The size, the visibility of the member, it is not important at all. It has no bearing on how vital a role that part may play. It may be an absolute essential role, even though not recognized by the majority. Just do your part faithfully. And do it the way God designed it to be done. That's our job. T cells, as important and vital as they are, can also sow discord in the body. Now, we're all familiar with a sister who developed a kidney infection. The T cells attacked the infection, but they did not stop there. They went on in an overzealous way to attack the kidney itself, eventually destroying the kidney's ability to function. It began a good work, but in its zeal, it took out a vital body organ. The body becomes ill, and the body will cease to function if the T cells in the immune system are not stopped. And so it is necessary to give chemotherapy and kill the immune system, kill the T helper cells, and hopefully that the new ones that grow will not be destructive to a vital body part. It is the T cells that are responsible for immune responses that lead to rejection of a transplanted organ. Virtually all autoimmune system diseases like diabetes, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, all of these diseases are T helper cell problems. And many allergic reactions like gluten intolerance. It sees the cell and it goes after it. Those microscopic cells are vital when they're working with the head in the body, doing what they were designed to do as helper cells. However, when they go too far and they go on the attack, when they should have just stopped and ignored the problem, they can be a disaster for the body. Paul finishes that verse by saying that the effectual working of every part maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. When every member of the body is working together, doing its own part in love, then the body grows and the body is strengthened. Mutual love among brethren is a great friend of spiritual growth. It is in love that the body edifies itself. Whereas, as Christ said, a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand, and a body fighting itself cannot live. When the T cell sees cancer cells and go after them, that's excellent. That protects the body. That's doing the job they were designed to do. But when the T cell sees gluten and goes on the attack, that hurts the body instead of helping. Now, I don't ever remember having gotten poison ivy. I guess my T cells seize the poison ivy and say, ignore it, doesn't belong there, but it's not important. But other people have T cells that if they get some poison ivy on their skin, full-blown attack, they rush everything to the scene and they get all blistered up and itchy and red and swollen. It causes a lot of unnecessary pain and discomfort to the body. God has placed each member in the body to work together for the edifying of itself in love. Our purpose in the ecclesia is to build, to love, to edify. That's what we're there for. So it would therefore naturally follow that one of the things that God would hate is he that soweth discord amongst brethren. This is diametrically opposed to the purpose that he has put us in the ecclesia to accomplish. God hath tempered the body together, and he set the members, every one of them, in the body as it hath pleased him, as he sees fit, not necessarily the way I would have done it. Christ's vision of his ecclesia is a body where each member is looking out for the welfare of the other members, knit together in love, one to another, and to their head, working together to strengthen and edify and build the whole body. We live in the communication age, where we are constantly in touch with one another, Facebook, Twitter, and other methods on our computer allow letters and emails to fly back and forth with information and opinions. Often they get especially passionate when controversy is introduced and when divisions are being created, each one approaching from their own narrow perspective, resulting in statements designed to tear each other apart and to destroy, rather than in love, building up the other that they disagree with. And yes, I said that, and I meant that. We are to build up the one we disagree with, not tear him or her down because we disagree. Marriage counselors have found that it really doesn't seem to matter how much couples argue and disagree. Both those that claim to be happily married and those who are unhappy argue and disagree at times. Researchers claim that they can predict with over 90% accuracy if a marriage will last by not how much a couple disagree or fight, but by how the couple fights. I used to tell my kids when they argued, fight nice. In debate class, we learned that in order to win a debate, you use certain techniques. One may be to discredit your opponent or make their argument appear irrelevant. No, you don't understand. And other such phrases, degrade them. Those tactics may win arguments with opponents, but they have no place in a marriage relationship or in an ecclesia. Never, never devalue your mate. Let me word that positively. Always honor, always esteem your mate. I don't care what the issue is, how strongly you may believe in your case, disagree if you must, but always show your mate that you still love, honor, respect, and value them as a person, and that you would never do anything on purpose that would hurt or dishonor them, even if you do not agree on a particular issue. The message is, you can be safe with me because I love you. That is intimacy. That is what marriage is all about. And brethren and sisters, that is what the ecclesia is all about. Paul does not tell us that the ecclesia is a type of marriage. No. He puts it the other way around. Marriage is a type of Christ and his bride. It's the ecclesia that's the focus. God has given us marriage as a temporary institution so that we have some concept of what Christ and the bride is all about, so that we in our own insignificant way can relate to it a little bit. It's not about marriage. It's about Christ and his ecclesia. That's the focus. Why do brethren and sisters think it's such a terrible thing when husband and wife have a disagreement and one walks out Well, when that happens in the ecclesia, it's just accepted and not seen as the great abomination that it really is. Paul gives us a firsthand example of what I'm saying. The things going on in Corinth were the same sort of things that any of us may encounter in our ecclesia, even worse. But when Paul wrote his letter to them, he wrote with a completely different attitude. Look what he says. For I wrote you out of great distress and anguish of heart, and with many tears, not to grieve you, but to let you know the depth of my love for you. There were bad things going on there. They needed to be addressed. And Paul addressed them with many tears, in great distress, in anguish of heart. Yes, brethren and sisters, by all means, correct the problem. But let the person understand your great love for them in the process. Don't sow discord. Can we say the same as Paul did? Whether in our letters, our emails, our Facebook posts, or in our verbal communications, that our words are words of love from the heart, words to build up and to let each other know the depth of our love for them? We must, brethren and sisters, resolve to be more like Paul, that whatever we say or do is done in love for the benefit even of those with whom we do not see eye to eye with on an issue. For I wrote you out of great distress and anguish of heart, with many tears, not to grieve you, but to let you know the depth of my love for you. I observe several things that causes discord in an ecclesia. One is the fact that we know best, and things should be done the way we see it. You know, the ecclesia will end up in ruin if you don't do it my way. I've seen that attitude destroy more ecclesias than the errors that were being defended against. We see this particularly when members transfer from one area to another. They're full of helpful suggestions. And although they do not say, hey, you don't know what you're doing, that's the message that they're delivering. It's not their intent to sow discord amongst the brethren, but I can't think of a better formula to do so. This is especially true when one recording brother has been in office for a long time. He starts out a great, responsible brother in Christ. Decisions need to be made, and the others can't be bothered to get involved and give their input. So he is forced to make a decision. Years go by, he makes decision after decisions, and things appear to be going well until he makes a decision and half the ecclesia agrees and the other half goes against it. And it's usually along family lines or geographic lines, or new members versus old members, or young versus old. There's natural divisions in an ecclesia. But by now, the recording brother becomes like a pope or a dictator in the ecclesia, and others to continue to give him the support. Who do you think you are, questioning him? By all means, we are commanded to give honor, to give respect, and to weigh heavily the thoughts and the opinion of the older members and those with authority. However, the recording brother, like all other members, gets one vote. As our brother said earlier today, no Jew, no Greek, no male, no more. We're all equal. We're all brethren and sisters. It's God's ecclesia. It's not that recording brother's ecclesia or our ecclesia. Each member needs to be active and to do their part every day, all classes, all meetings. Otherwise, it will end in discord. It will be sowing discord among the brethren. Paul writes to Timothy, "These things write I unto thee, hoping to come unto thee shortly. But if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the ecclesia of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." We, brethren and sisters, are dealing with the ecclesia of the living God. It's not my ecclesia or our ecclesia. It's the ecclesia of the living God meeting at Canton or Boston or any other city. We are members of a body put there to strengthen it in love and concern one for another. Can we comprehend that God already sees the ecclesia working together in love and harmony as a perfectly coordinated body? That he has placed each member there for a purpose that he sees as important to the body, just like our natural body? He put each part there because he saw a purpose and he saw that that part was necessary. It's important to give nourishment and love to the head and to all the other parts in the ecclesia where we meet. Can we begin the work of moving towards this great vision and look around us today and see where and how we can make this happen? It will take each member in each congregation working hard to make the place where the spiritual family comes together a place of peace and love, where anyone and everyone in fellowship who walks through the door is welcome and made to feel at home. Do you welcome each member each week and let them know that you're excited and glad to see them when they arrive? Do you keep in touch with those that are unable to attend, letting them know that they are remembered and missed? Does a card, a note, a phone call, a text, a letter come from you? Do you really care whether or not they were there? Did you let them know you cared if you really do? Everyone in attendance at service needs to feel welcome and safe and able to find a role in the life of the congregation. It's God's ecclesia. We each have a part to play in the building up and edifying of it in love. To live up to this vision that Christ gives us of the ecclesia, each member will need to know what role they can perform and why they need to be involved in a regular attendance at all services. We need to understand we need to be there, as Brother Joshua said, not because we are indispensable or because we're the most important, but because we need the support of others, and in turn, they need our support. That's the way God designed it. That's the way a body works. That's the way an ecclesia works. That's the way it's got to be done. You provide a link to someone each week by your presence, your words of encouragement, sometimes just by showing up. As a member, your presence alone can make a difference because you have that spirit of love. If a smile and a greeting, a hug, a handshake, a listening ear, a well-placed word, or anything at all, they're expressions of care, of concern, and of love. And brethren and sisters, God has a way of taking even the most simple and smallest expression and magnifying them in the lives of those that need the help. Just, they walk in. I remember one brother saying, went to a class one night, and he said, those brethren there had no idea what they did for me. And he was right, they didn't. They just had their class. God has a way of working if we're there, if we're doing our part. You and I will have to come to know that we need to come and hear the truth taught each week because it's a lifeline to spiritual sanity in a world that works overtime to strip away faith and belief. It will require every brother and every sister, every member to faithfully teach the truth of the Bible and make it come alive in the hearts and minds of every attendance at every week's service. God must speak through each of us in words and in deeds. When we take seriously this collective responsibility, we will open ourselves to becoming vessels through which God's love can flow. It can flow through us out to others in a strong and vibrant ecclesia. Before I die, I want to be in an ecclesia whose members truly love one another. The good news, brethren and sisters, is that you have a part in making this vision a reality. Jesus Christ has called and appointed you and me to make it happen each week, nay, each day of the week, as the bride is prepared for the future marriage. We can choose to be an instrument in his hand and make it happen wherever we are and wherever we go. So we can readily see why sowing discord amongst brethren is one of the things that God hates. It is against the deep principles of the mind of Christ. It runs counter to the purpose for which he has established the ecclesia. Let us, brethren and sisters, eschew it and work together in love. Peter closes his thoughts with this command. Finally, be ye all of one mind. And I think of an older brother who once told me that Brother Thomas received a request from a brother. This brother was having a controversy, and he asked Brother Thomas to come over and give the other brother one of his broadside. And probably today, many of you are not familiar, at least the younger ones, aren't familiar with what is meant by give him a broadside. But this picture, if you've been in Boston, in Charleston Harbor, you recognize the USS Constitution. It's called Old Ironside because it repelled so many cannonballs during the wars it was in. It's a 44-gun frigate, 42 of them along the broadsides. The strategy in the battle is to get broadside somebody. You can see this picture, the cannons, all those little portholes on the side of the ship are where the cannons are sticking out. And if you can get your ship broadside to another, you've got all your firepower going against them, and all their firepower is going out to sea. And so before they can get those sailing vessels turned around, they've probably done several spins underwater, because you can blow them out of the water by giving them the broadside. Brother Thomas's request to that brother was, we use broadside on the enemy, not on the brethren. How many brothers, when in controversy, bring out the broadside, get as much firepower as they can muster, and give them all they've got? Moses had the same attitude as Brother Thomas. When he saw the Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, he killed the Egyptian. And the next day, when he saw two Hebrews striving, he would have put them at one again, saying, "Sirs, ye are brethren, why do ye wrong one to another?" But the Hebrew thought he was going to get a broadside from Moses. Moses treated the Hebrew strife far different than he did the Egyptian. Christ could have given a broadside to his disciples many times. Instead, in love, he explained, he taught, he worked with them to nourish them, to strengthen them, to bring them along. He did not give them a broadside. As Brother Thomas said, we saved the broadside for the enemies. So Peter commanded us, finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful. Be courteous. Before I die, I want to be in an ecclesia whose members truly love one another. One day, this ecclesia will exist and will be a reality on this earth. But brethren and sisters, it is our duty as much as possible to make this a reality today. Each one of us should begin today to achieve this vision.